There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Welcome to Media Geek. This is our weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesendahl. I'm your host on today's program. What's going on with the FCC? They are very quietly doing all sorts of little variances for low power stations, even people who were accused of being pirates. Also, a bunch of these low-power stations getting traded around. We've talked about it before. John Anderson from DIYmedia.net is here, and we're going to jaw that over and catch up with all sorts of hinky things going on in Washington. Do stay tuned. John, thanks for joining me once again. Now, you were in Madison, Wisconsin, before you came down here to the balmy wilds of Champaign-Urbana.
Yes.
Does it feel like home now?
Yes, it feels great. I love this.
It's wonderful. For those not in the know about East Central Illinois, the home here of the Media Geek radio program, we got walloped with like 12 or 16
plus
inches of snow and blizzard conditions. Shut down the whole city.
50 mile an hour plus winds.
For 2 days. And it's still not exactly balmy or pleasant, but...
And more snow is on the way.
I'm wearing snow pants, man, because to get through those drifts and such.
You are a wussy.
Nah, I'm warm is what I am. I am warm.
I am plowing the intersection of media democracy furiously.
Yes, because right, John, you know, John's day job, so to speak, is the producer and host of Media Minutes for Free Press, which is, yeah, you sit there, you direct traffic, you plow it out.
I push cars out of the intersection of media and democracy when they get stuck in a foot plus of snow with 50 mile an hour plus winds and wind chills in the double digits below zero.
There's a lot
of fun job.
But for fun, you like to keep up on the FCC.
Yes.
As most people do, I think.
Right.
They had a secret little FCC fetish.
Just pick a regulatory agency and run with it.
And lately, they've been... Well, what sparked this is you found that they issued a license, this sort of special license to a low-power station recently in Nevada.
Yeah, Goldfield, Nevada, which is actually population 440. It's a bona fide ghost town. I mean, the only people that live there live around the ghost town, and the ghost town is apparently the tourist attraction. There's this guy, I don't know how old he is, but he's got to be retired. He looks like he's in his 70s at least, named Rod Moses, was running a station actually for like the last couple of years called Radio Goldfield. And what it played was oldies music off an MP3 player, interspersed with community news and events, weather reports when there was, you know, blizzard-like conditions in Goldfield, and traffic reports and things like this. And the FCC actually came to visit him last year. They inspected his radio station, and they gave him a warning letter saying that he was operating a pirate radio station and he needed to shut down. Well, apparently what he did was 24 hours after getting this contact, he immediately shut down and then started making phone calls, one of which ended up to the office of Harry Reid, who is the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat from Nevada. And Harry Reid wrote a letter to the FCC saying that the wonderful programming that Radio Goldfield brought to the community of population 440 by this seasoned citizen guy was of such public import that the FCC should really consider whether or not he's really a pirate and look into possibly getting him legalized. So the FCC, which responds very well to political pressure, especially from high places like the Senate Majority Leader's office, wrote a letter to Rod Moses and said, in effect, we can't give you a license right now because we're not accepting low power FM radio station licenses, but we'll grant you what's called special temporary authority. Special temporary authority is something that's typically given out in conditions like Hurricane Katrina. When stations have to bump their power up or operate from an alternate location, it's typically not used to legalize a pirate radio station. And special temporary authority is only good for 6 months, at least ostensibly according to the regulations. Anyway, Radio Goldfield now has special temporary authority to operate at 100 watts on a channel. And they also said, the FCC also said to Rod Moses that when, if and when, another LPFM license application opens up, you can apply to become legit. And they even gave him the latitude and longitude where he could put his transmitter, and they told him what frequency to apply for. And this is not quite the first time this has happened, but it's the first time that it's been so publicly done where there's actually been correspondence that's available for people like me and other journalists to look at. And in effect, what the FCC did was licensed, put a pirate radio station in a gray area of the law that has legitimated its existence. And now, that is unbelievable.
And according to the law, former pirates aren't supposed to be eligible even.
Right.
For licenses, for low power FM licenses specifically.
Yeah. Now this is the other interesting thing is there was a great article in the Pahrump Valley Times, because the big town is Pahrump, the home of Art Bell. And they published this very long piece talking with Rod about what he was doing and things like that. And Rod said, well, I shut down within 24 hours. And it's interesting that he mentions that, because the FCC's initial LPFM proposal back in 1999, when they were first proposing the service, gave what was called an amnesty provision to pirates that said, okay, we understand that there is a real legitimate demand for more access to the airwaves. And so micro radio is some sort of exemplification of that happening. If these pirates, when contacted by the FCC, shut down within 24 hours, they'll still be eligible. That was never actually written into the law, though, because Congress stepped in at the behest of the National Association of Broadcasters and National Public Radio and passed something called the Radio Broadcasting Preservation Act, which explicitly attacked and removed the pirate amnesty provision from the statute that is now in play. However, the FCC is treating this particular case as if that language is still in the statute. So it's a case of where a regulatory agency that's actually executing the policy will sometimes go a little bit above and beyond what the legislators who dictate the policy really want to have happen. I think that it's it's a smart thing to do. I mean, from the FCC's point of view, it's common sense. There really is no war on pirates that it needs to conduct. And this guy's obviously providing a public service and has ample documentation to, you know, prove that fact. But it's also an interesting, possibly a precursor that the FCC may be taking a different stance on the expansion of low power FM.
Well, but this can't be the first time that a unlicensed radio station has garnered the support of an elected official, even a federal elected official. I mean, we have stations like Free Radio Brattleboro.
Right, in Vermont.
In Vermont, which, you know, really provide a true community radio service with lots of community volunteers in a town a little bit bigger than this place in Nevada, and as well as other stations like San Francisco Liberation Radio and Free Radio Santa Cruz. So why didn't the public support and the public official support these stations get? Why did that not have the same effect as Harry Reid stepping in?
Well, because Harry Reid has control ultimately over legislation that comes before the Senate.
So they're kissing up.
And one of the pieces of legislation that comes before the Senate is an appropriations bill, which funds the FCC. And therefore, regulatory agencies are not loath to court dissension from those that fund them.
Well, and already Kevin Martin, we saw in front of the Commerce Committee, it's getting a little hot in his seat right now.
There is one other interesting point to mention, and that is that, like I said before, this is not the first time something like this has happened. You said that there have been other stations that have garnered public support, and that's all fine and good, but it hasn't gone anywhere because the public support came from officialdom below the federal level. You know, it was nice that they showed they had community support.
These stations didn't get anything from like a U.S. representative even, or even
no.
The local senators?
No. Actually, okay. In Vermont's case, Brattleboro, Vermont, Bernie Sanders did support, but he was only a representative, and he wasn't engaged in any sort of committee.
One of 438.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really matter. But when a senator steps in with direct control over legislation that can fund you, the idea is a lot different, and This has happened before. Like I mentioned, Don Imus, famous syndicated radio talk show host, broadcasts his show live over several hundred radio stations and MSNBC every morning from his ranch in New Mexico. In 2002, Don Imus put up a pirate radio transmitter on his ranch so that his ranch hands could listen to the simulcast of his talk show. The FCC came out to visit Don Imus, and they said, this is obviously busting Part 15 levels for unlicensed broadcasting. You are a pirate. You need to turn it off the air. Well, it just so happened that later on in the week that the FCC showed up, Don Imus was having Arizona Senator John McCain on his show. John McCain at that time in 2002 was, of course, a big player on the Senate's Commerce Committee.
He was the chairman, wasn't
chairman,
he?
Chairman, I think, yeah. Therefore is in kind of a similar position as Harry Reid, had control over issues of legislation dealing with the FCC. Well, Don Imus gets John McCain on his show and starts busting him about, why is the FCC coming around to my ranch and giving me a hard time about having this pirate transmitter on the air? Can you look into this and fix it for me? And John McCain muttered something not quite intelligible, and I haven't actually heard the clip. I'm still looking for it, circa December of 2002, anybody. But the case just kind of went away. You never heard any more from the FCC about Don Imus's pirate box. There was no further, like, you know, forfeiture or injunction attempt or raid or anything. It just kind of was, I think, swept under the rug.
So a little piece of advice then to would-be pirates.
Get a senator as your friend.
Yeah, that's right. So if you're in Illinois, start gussing up
Obama.
To Barack
Hit
Obama.
Hit Obama right now.
Hit Obama right now. We need your support. Dick Durbin, too, I suppose.
Yeah, why not? But I mean, neither of them are engaged in the communications policy-making process to a significant extent. However, they do have clout because they're one of 100 as opposed to
435. Well, and Dick Durbin is second in charge.
Mm-hmm. So maybe there's some cachet there. It certainly can't hurt. And it's better than going and getting a referendum of your local community. It's better than getting the mayor involved or the governor or anything. It's get a senator. And that's only one of the loopholes that we're talking about here.
And you are listening to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. And right now we're at that intersection. We're crashing in with that critical examination, but this is also grassroots.
That's right.
What I say.
Right.
And you can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. I'm Paul Riesmanel. I'm your host. And with me in the studio is John Anderson of DIYmedia.net, also the producer of Media Minutes for Free Press. Go to freepress.net/Media Minutes. Download the MP3 every single week to find out what's going on at the intersection of media and democracy. So what's the other loophole?
The other loophole is if you can get enough people to complain to the FCC directly in some other proceeding involving a radio station, you might get the opportunity to apply for an LPFM license. Especially the pirate guy who already has a station on the air can't apply for a license yet. But if you complain a lot and get 263 or more of your friends to complain, they might just open you up a special LPFM filing window for yourself. This happened in Texas at the end of last month, a letter dated January 31st from the FCC. Apparently, there is this place, Kilgore, Texas. Kilgore Junior College has a radio station, KTPB. And, educational institutions are having a hard time with funding, so a lot of them are considering selling off their radio properties and things like that and getting out of the business completely. KTPB is being sold to our good friends, the Educational Media Foundation, who are very prominent religious broadcasters. They run the K-Love radio network and the Air One contemporary Christian music radio networks. They're selling the station to EMF, and EMF is going to change the station's format, which happens to be right now classical music. So KTPB is a classical music station.
So there's a lot of little old ladies
and irate bourgeoisie
with a lot of letter writing time on their hands.
Yes, who spammed the FCC effectively with correspondence objecting to the sale of KTPB from this junior college to EMF. So they're going to get praise Jesus music over classical, Vivaldi, whatever. Right. So
yeah, there's a lot of praise Jesus music in the classical canon.
That
too.
Is true.
I think they're overlooking
that. But I don't think it doesn't fit the EMF's formats. Right. Strings and winds are not big.
Now that's what I call gospel.
Amy Grant plays cello. I don't think so. Anyway, the station is going to be sold. The format's going to be flipped, and that's pissed off a lot of classical music listeners. 263, in fact, who wrote the FCC and objected to the sale of KTPB. Well, in this letter dated January 31st, the FCC tells these people that they realize that this is a unique sale. I mean, they can't get involved in the sale itself. They can't even get involved in discussions over what type of content radio stations should use, because the FCC is not in the business of regulating program formats. However, they did think that the outpouring of public concern and support of the sale was so significant that the FCC basically told these folks, if you would like to have your own LPFM classical music radio station, we'll give you 90 days to apply for one. Here is a latitude, longitude space for your transmitter to go. Here's an open frequency that it might fit upon. If any of you 263 want to band together, form a not-for-profit, and apply for your own LPFM radio station, we would love to accept that application. That is also wholly unique, because the FCC up to this point, as it does with most radio station licensing practices, opens up specific filing windows for either regions of the country or the country as a whole. So everyone gets to apply or nobody gets to apply. In this case, they're actually doing this piecemeal outreach to legal, you know, to create one LPFM radio station for one small niche constituency that bitched loudly.
I mean,
enough.
It seems like they're really trying to pick off a couple little examples where they can say, no, we do believe in localism.
That is right. The FCC is under a lot of pressure to do things in its media ownership rules proceeding that actually show that it has a sense of what a public interest standard is. And if the FCC can go to Congress or to other critics and say, look, actually, we do care about localism. In Kilgore, Texas, we just approved specially a low-power FM radio station. Look, we're actually thinking about pirates in a different way. We're legalizing the guy in Nevada, then they can, you know, use that as a little crumb to say, let us do larger consolidation related policies, because we will reach out in selected circumstances.
So do you think there's a particular commissioner's fingerprints on this?
That is a really good question. The interesting thing is I really don't know. The letter from the FCC to people in Kilgore, Texas, is signed by Peter Doyle. Peter Doyle is the chief of the audio division of the FCC's Media Bureau.
Okay.
Peter Doyle is a proponent of low-power FM radio. He has attended barn raisings for Prometheus Radio Project.
And
they have very good contacts with people like Prometheus.
He's a career bureaucrat.
He's a career bureaucrat, and he actually thinks that low-power FM is valuable. And I think he may have exercised his administrative discretion in order to interpret the rules in such a way as to allow at least this one and possibly both of these exemptions to take place. Are there other higher level fingerprints on top?
Who knows?
Well, you know, you have Michael Copps and Jonathan Adelstein, both who are strong proponents of low power FM. Jonathan Adelstein is on record as actually endorsing micro radio as a tactic to pressure the FCC to consider expanding low power FM. So he has the support of two people on the eighth floor, and that may be enough in this new environment in D.C. where Democrats are in, you know, nominal control of Congress to give Peter Doyle the feeling that he has the latitude to do something like this. It's a nice gesture. It's a great favor for the people involved. Does it signal some sort of national policy strategy, you know, change?
Probably not.
We'll see. I mean, you just got to keep watching the documents.
They're still busy busting pirates down in Florida left and
yes,
right.
Yes, they are. And that's mostly actually the state's job.
Right, right. But the FCC has been involved in some of these raids.
The FCC has been involved. And in their 2006 report and strategic plan that they gave to the commissioners earlier this year, they said that they'd closed a whopping 85 radio stations last year. So they were working hard on the pirate problem.
85 out of how many?
At least several hundred.
Yeah.
If not more.
And how many got shut down in the great state of Illinois here?
I don't know. I'd have to look that up.
Give me a while. One up in the Quad Cities was over in
Iowa.
On the Iowa
that
side.
That was in Bettendorf.
And it was in good old, beautiful Bettendorf, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the river here from the great state of Illinois. But we haven't seen a lot of activity here.
No, and I think that's just the Chicago field office being busy doing other things. There were no pirate enforcement actions in Illinois as of last year. None.
And I do have affiliates in New York State.
Yeah, there were a lot in there.
A lot in New York.
New York was the fourth, tied for second place, actually.
Really?
Between Florida and New Jersey as the most active place for the FCC to
and
do
the,
business against pirates.
New Jersey Broadcasters Association has been very vigilant in pushing the FCC to to bust pirates in
New
that state.
Jersey actually has a law on the books, just like Florida, that criminalizes pirate broadcasting at the state level. However, unlike Florida, state and local officials in New Jersey do not appear to be really zealous in enforcing this law. In fact, I don't know of anybody who's actually been charged or convicted under the anti-pirate law in New Jersey.
The New Jersey broadcasters have a great inferiority complex. I mean, I'm from New Jersey. So I know from whence I speak. I did radio New Jersey, and it's dominated by New York on one side and Philadelphia on the other. And,
right.
Those poor New Jersey broadcasters feel like they don't get a break. In a lot of ways, they don't. And, you know, there's one VHF TV station in the entire state, licensed to Secaucus, New Jersey. And, of course, everything they do is oriented towards New York City.
Right. But even though that station has special public interest obligations on it,
yes,
as a part
right.
of its license.
Yep. And which
to serve Northern New Jersey.
Which has been brought up very recently, actually,
yes.
With the FCC. So, interesting things there with some potential, with a couple loopholes on Low Power FM. So you think one thing this may be indicating is that the FCC is going to open up another proceeding, another window, perhaps for low power licenses then.
Well, in the case of Radio Goldfield in Nevada, as I said, the special temporary authority assignment only lasts for 6 months, but it can be renewed.
Yeah, right.
The statute says a limited number of times, which doesn't mean it can be indefinitely renewed. At least that's the interpretation as it's on the paper. But that may suggest that the FCC could open up some sort of LPFM filing window. If you remember, the initial LPFM service was supposed to have two classes of stations, 100-watt license and 110-watt license class. There have never been any 10-watt license classes opened up yet. They've never taken applications for it. So there's still a lot of expansion that can be done.
In the couple of minutes we have left,
yes.
Let's turn to translators, those great little FM stations
right.
that are used to retransmit larger stations, but in the low power, in the non-commercial band, they can be anywhere, any distance away from their parent station. And as we've talked over the last couple of years, actually, there's been these groups of Christian broadcasters who snapped up tons of translator stations and appear to be trafficking in them. But there was kind of a scandal there. In that part of the world.
Recently? Yes. Well, the trafficking is still going on. Two companies, and specifically Radio Assist Ministry and Edgewater Broadcasting, owned and controlled by the same guy in Twin Falls, Idaho, have snapped up thousands of these construction permits to build FM translator stations. And they've been selling them off piecemeal to the tune of more than $2 million, I think, of income that's been generated by this little deal here. These are completely non-commercial stations being sold for money after being applied for and granted construction permits for free. It's like making money from nothing almost, except for the investment in time. And the granting process of the transfers between Radio Assist and Edgewater Broadcasting and the various clients that want to build radio networks on the cheap is continuing to go on. The last application was from Edgewater to Wagon Wheel Communications Corporation for a translator in Rock Springs, Wyoming, February 9th. So the sales are still going on. However, these people who are buying these things aren't really cognizant of what the FCC rules are. And the FCC rules say that after a predetermined amount of time, you have to reapply for your license, renew the license. And these people just aren't following through on the paperwork. So these translator licenses are expiring and the translators are staying on the air, technically now as pirate radio religious broadcasters. And the FCC has been issuing a slew of fines against these organizations, including Radio Assist Ministry, for failing to renew their license applications and effectively operating without a license, pirate broadcasters. They've been socked with fines anywhere between $1,500 and $8,000 per station, and the FCC has probably issued a good four dozen or more just against translator stations. But there's a big crackdown going on license renewal, dotting your I's and crossing your T's across the board.
Of course,
those
fines will probably get knocked down.
Yeah, someone's lawyer will file a multi-page brief in rejoinder, and the FCC will knock down the fine. Possibly. We'll see. If the FCC is maybe developing some sort of public interest backbone now, maybe that won't happen. But you never know.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yes.
It's great out of loopholes. Getcha.
Yeah, loopholes are great. And the one that I guess we should touch on in the last couple minutes that we have is a court case that's actually been going on involving pirate broadcasting. You want to go there?
Which one is it?
San Francisco Liberation Radio.
Oh, that's right. I should have mentioned that Yeah, I should have mentioned that before.
Valentine's Day had an open hearing in front of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco at the UC Berkeley Law School. A 3-judge panel heard a challenge to a lower court's ruling that basically justified the FCC raiding SFLR back in, I think, 2003 and taking it off the air. San Francisco Liberation Radio is one of the old guard of the micro radio LPFM movement. They actually engaged the FCC in relatively regular correspondence. Every time the FCC came, there were letters sent back and forth, and attorneys for the station were in contact with the FCC, and the FCC came in with federal marshals and raided the operation one day in, I think, 2003. And San Francisco Liberation Radio went to court basically asking the FCC to return its gear because they said that they didn't have fair warning that the actual raid was going down, and they'd asked for fair warning if a raid was going down. And the FCC said, no, we don't have to give you fair warning because you're criminals. And by the way, there's this maritime law that says that if a pirate has a potential to flee, then federal authorities can step in and seize the ship, as it were, without prior warning. Now, a building, specifically the house of some people where this radio station was residing, is not going to pick up and flee.
California's not yet broken off and turned into
Arizona
an island.
Bay. Right. So the courts were basically considering whether or not a building is a ship and whether the FCC had to give a telegraphing notice that it was going to seize the ship, as it were. There's been a very small report back from this hearing that took place. There were 3 judges. One was just basically shouting questions at the attorney for San Francisco Liberation Radio, like, what would due process have gained you? 4 more days of illegal broadcasting? Is that what you wanted? And the other two were asking questions like, you know, do you really think you would have moved the station? Yes or no? What was your correspondence like with the FCC? You know, a lot more about the intent and the principles behind the radio station than whether or not there was a flagrant rule violation going on. The folks at SFLR don't seem very enthused by the tone of the argument as it took place. But it's going to be a little while, I think, before the decision comes down. But even if it goes in San Francisco Liberation Radio's way, it doesn't necessarily mean that the station has carte blanche to.
No, because they're really working on a very
they're debating
slim
a technical detail
technicality that really doesn't have a lot to do with the act of broadcasting.
They are tying
itself.
First Amendment into this issue in a very tenuous way. But it's not something that if it goes down as a victory, other pirates can then stand upon and say, okay, let's now storm the high seas of the airwaves or anything like that.
Well, and we'll certainly get more about that on the Media Geek website and on DIYmedia.net, your website. John, once again, thanks for joining me here.
Thanks for having me. I love babbling on your show in the freezing cold.
That's right, because this is more than 5 minutes.
Right.
We get a full 30 minutes every darn week here.
That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with another half-hour look at independent and grassroots media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. In the meantime, check out the frequently updated Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. The program can also be downloaded at radio.MediaGeek.net, where you can subscribe to the podcast. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and is heard on 10 other community stations around North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WTND Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, WYQZ in Warrenton, Bealeton, Virginia, KWMD Kasilov in Anchorage, Alaska, and Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington. It's also on the web at Free Radio San Diego, Pirate969.org, and RadioDriftless.org. Media Geek is free to air on your local non-commercial station too. Just email Paul at MediaGeek.net. That's also where you can send comments about the program, Paul at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.